You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
We know we're not as good as the number one team in the country. In this league, I mean, every game you're going to play is going to be a hard game. Every one.
That was Arkansas basketball coach John Calipari after the Razorbacks lost 76-52 over the weekend to the top-ranked Tennessee Volunteers over in Knoxville. Arkansas losing its SEC opener, falling to 11-3 overall. Probably going to fall out of the AP poll whenever it's released a little bit later today. They take on Ole Miss this week and Florida this week, a couple of other really good teams. Both of those games will be at Bud Walton Arena. We'll talk a lot about that today, first with Anthony Christensen, who was in Knoxville for the game on Saturday. I don't know what I expected from this game, Anthony, but I didn't expect Arkansas to win, but I expected them to compete better. And I think that was probably the frustrating thing from Saturday's game, is the fact that they've got an opportunity to play the top-ranked team in the country, and I don't know if I'd say the energy wasn't there, the want-to wasn't there, but you know, just something or some things all kind of combined to give what looked like a lackluster effort on the floor.
Yeah, especially when you look at the rebounding numbers. Obviously, Tennessee 51-29 rebounding. Tennessee finished with, I don't remember the exact number. I think it was 21 offensive rebounds?
24.
24 offensive rebounds. So almost matching Arkansas's total rebound number with just offensive rebounds. Obviously, that's going to, you know, kind of be the highlight whenever something happens like that. But I mean, the first 4 minutes of the game were really entertaining, kind of back and forth. DJ Wagner had 7 points in the first 4 minutes, and Arkansas was up 10-9, I think. And I was like, okay, maybe we're going to have a shootout here. But then obviously Tennessee's defense kind of stepped in and really played well. Tennessee's got, I think, the number one rated defense in the country per Ken Pom. I can check that real quick. And yes, they do. But, yeah, I mean, just kind of, as John Calipari said, just kind of got manhandled throughout that game. You know, does something like that change if they have a shoot-around? I'm not, you know, sure. I know, because obviously, you know, he said that they didn't have a shoot-around and he would have done it differently had he had the opportunity to do so. But sometimes it's hard to get that in when it's an early tip like that. So you kind of understand not doing it, but at the same time, like, you're playing against the number one team in the country, you probably should have a shoot around. So I know that's kind of been a discussion point since the game ended and he said that. But yeah, just all Tennessee. You could see why Tennessee is ranked number one team in the country, why Tennessee is still now the only unbeaten team remaining. I put Tennessee at number one in my AP poll today. Not necessarily because you think, you know, beating Arkansas is like this godly accomplishment. but I think there's something to be said about being the last remaining undefeated team, even though I think maybe Auburn is still the better team.
Well, I hadn't planned to talk about the shoot around yet. I was going to talk about it later in the segment. Sydney, if you'll get the fourth Calipari clip I sent you ready, and we'll play what John Calipari had to say about the lack of a shoot around. There was some criticism of Calipari over the weekend. Number one, that they didn't have a shoot around on game day. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what I think probably happened was they go in and they have a practice or a shoot around or something on Friday in the arena, and then he didn't want the team, or he felt like because they're on Eastern time, it's an early tip, he felt like it might be better for them just to sleep and get rest and not go have a shoot around early that morning. And then there was some criticism too that he flew to, I think, Chicago for Derrick Rose's jersey retirement on Saturday night. So I don't know. I mean, these are little things that I don't know that people latch onto if they win the game or even if they have a more competitive showing. But now it's like, it's almost like football season is over. And so now everybody's taking their pitchforks across the street, you know, from football to basketball. And this is what we're going to get angry about. I think back to something that Tim Corbin, who's Vanderbilt's baseball coach, an outstanding baseball coach, told me one time. He said something along the lines of, sometimes every time that you play a game, there's an opposing force there. He said, and sometimes they just play better. And now Arkansas, they didn't give a great effort, but you also have to look at Tennessee and say, that team's just really darn good. And I think they challenge themselves a lot more in the non-conference than Arkansas challenges itself. And they've got a team that has played together a lot more. I mean, how many Tennessee players have they got that were back from last year's team that were with the Elite Eight? Mm-hmm. They've got Zakai Ziegler, who's been part of this program now for 4 years. That's a unicorn in today's game. And so, I don't know. I think that some of that anger is probably a little bit misguided. But this is what John Calipari had to say about the shoot-around and the decision not to have it on Saturday.
I would do different in this game. And I all night tossed and turned. We didn't do a shoot-around today. And I just felt our body time is noon pretty early. If I had to do it over again, we would have gone shot shoot around. Because we had three or four guys like kind of no show.
You know, the thing with sports is that coaches, anytime they don't win the game, they're gonna go back and they're gonna second guess every single thing they do, and this is easy to second guess. I don't think the lack of a shoot around is the reason Arkansas lost this game. If they have a shoot around, I don't know that helps them not get out-rebounded by 22. I don't know that a shoot-around helps them keep Tennessee off the offensive boards. Maybe Arkansas shoots better. Maybe they make it a little bit better game. But the shooting numbers are not really the reason they lost this game.
No, absolutely not. I think you touched on it. Obviously, Tennessee is what Tennessee is, just a very good basketball team. A lot of continuity, a lot of experience. I mean, Zakai Ziegler is a fourth-year point guard. I mean, that's just, you know, like you said, that's just a rarity in modern, you know, college basketball. And they've got some continuity from a team that was in the Elite Eight from last season. And they're just a very good basketball team. That being said, obviously, you know, maybe it does help them just shoot it a little bit better, especially from the free throw line. Their free throw numbers were quite terrible.
6 of 13.
Yeah, not good.
I think they started 1 of 8.
Yeah, not ideal. if you're gonna do that, and I asked John Calipari about just, you know, the offense and not scoring, because that was the first time in almost 2 years that a Calipari team had failed to reach 55 points.
Mm-hmm.
The last time was January 7th, 2023 against Alabama.
And that was basically the same score, 78-52, yes. As this one, 76-52.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he had said, well, they did a great job on our free throw shooters. so, you know, obviously that was something that clearly bothered him. Didn't shoot well from three either. So maybe those numbers do end up, you know, looking better if they do have a shoot around, but I don't necessarily think they win the game. Maybe it's a better game if they have it, but it's, you know, it is what it is. You can see the reasons for and reasons against. If I were a coach, I'd probably always opt for a shoot around. But obviously I'm not a coach, and every coach I've ever talked to has forgotten more about basketball than I know. So, but yeah, that's kind of where I land on the shoot around.
You know, with Arkansas, what I keep coming back to is that they've got to have their top players perform. Mm. And against Tennessee, it just didn't happen. If you have a Duke Thero scoring 6 points, you're probably not going to win a game.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you're playing a real weak team, perhaps you can get away with that. Maybe somebody else goes off for a career night. Okay, maybe. But, you know, in this type of game, they weren't ever going to win this game if a Duke Thero doesn't score more than 6 points. And he had a really bad game, 3 for 7 overall, 0 for 4 from the free throw line. Jonas Adu, he did not show up in this game. Had a little bit of foul trouble early, limited his minutes some, but even when he was on the floor, he was not real effective. I don't know, you know, I've heard some people say that whenever he was at Tennessee, whenever he faced more physical big men, that he backed down against them, that he didn't have as good of a game. Maybe that's what we saw. Maybe it was just nerves or anxiety or something about going back to play at Knoxville. But he didn't have a good game. And then you've got Nellie Davis, and I know he's been dealing with a wrist injury, but he goes 0-for in this game. And this team was constructed, I think, with the thought that Nellie Davis could be maybe their leading scorer. And they're getting nothing out of him offensively right now. You know, I think that good offensive players, okay, if your jump shot's not falling, you're finding other ways to impact the game. And in his 25 minutes, I don't know of a way that he impacted the game. They've got to find a way for him to get going. And I would even throw Zvonimir Visic in here too. Really outside of the pick and roll three-pointer at the top of the key, he's adding nothing to this team right now. He had a couple of blocks on one possession against Tennessee. But he's not physical enough to get in there and bang bodies in the paint. He's not really a shot blocker, even though he did have some, you know, shot blocks the other day against Tennessee. They've got to figure out these guys and figure out what their roles are, I think, in order for this team to be successful moving forward. And it doesn't get any easier. I mean, It doesn't get any harder. Tennessee is as good of a team as they're going to see this year. But I mean, Florida, boy, they look really good, and they're coming in here on Saturday.
Chris Beard and Ole Miss. Phenomenal.
Chris Beard and Ole Miss. I mean, they're going to get in there and they're going to yuck it up with you inside. They're going to make it a real physical, you know, I mean, a man's game, right? Mm-hmm. And so Arkansas's got to learn from this thing against Tennessee pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, they did get, and John Calipari mentioned it too, they got some no-shows from some guys. I mean, especially when you look at a guy like John L. Davis, you know, what he was so good at Florida Atlantic was, obviously, he was a 40% three-point shooter. Right now he's at 35. But also, like, he was, like, elite at getting to the free throw line. This season he has 9 free throw attempts. So, you know, I don't know if that's something that they need to, you know, improve upon, you know, maybe tell him like, hey, drive inside more, and stuff like that. But I don't know what the answer is. But I mean, just looking at his numbers from, you know, his last season at Florida Atlantic, I mean, he was playing 78% of minutes. His offensive rating was 114. He was, you know, drawing 4.6 fouls per 40 minutes. And you look up now at Arkansas, his offensive rating is 104. He's playing 63% of minutes, and his fouls drawn per 40 minutes is 1.5. So I think that may be something that, you know, if they could emphasize that, I don't know, but do you want John L. Davis driving when that's also kind of a Deutheros game? Like, how do you kind of balance these things? So that's kind of where that, I guess, lands. I don't know what the answer is or where you get that from, but yeah, I mean, just all of the no shows. I mean, I think Tennessee's defense did really well on Adu-Thiro, kind of really limited his opportunities to drive at the basket like he likes to do. He did get that steal and big dunk in the first half, I believe. But that was really all you can really think of and remember from, you know, that game that he had Saturday. So what the answer is, I'm not sure. It doesn't get easier. They've still got, you know, a road game at Auburn as well. That might be the most difficult game, you know, anywhere in the country this season. So, you know, maybe that is a harder game. We'll see. But yeah, it doesn't get any easier, and you got to find ways to get, you know, John L. Davis going, which has been, I think, one of the biggest talking points of the season so far.
There's a saying in baseball: good pitching beats good hitting. And you can kind of translate that to this basketball game. Good defense beats good offense. Both of them had really elite. Tennessee had elite defensive numbers. Arkansas was top 5 nationally in field goal percentage. And good defense totally won this game the other day. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. Analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. This is what John Calipari had to say immediately after the game on Saturday.
So we miss free throws, we miss threes, and we get out rebounded by 30. Aren't you like, how did you only get beat by 25? Could have been 50. But hats off to Tennessee. They're the number one team for a reason, and they did it to us.
If Tennessee has a better offensive game, it probably is a pretty big blowout. Mm-hmm. For all of the criticism that you have about Arkansas, I thought their defense played pretty well. The problem was the offensive rebounds and the 16 second chance points. You know, you're never going to keep a team totally off the offensive board. You're never going to shut them out in second chance points. But if they significantly lowered that, it's a much different game the final 10 minutes or so when it felt like it was over.
Yeah, absolutely. And I you know, you mentioned it, obviously the defense was all right. Just the offensive rebounding, which, you know, I guess makes it not all right. I don't know. But, yeah, and then I also want to highlight, you know, Chaz Lanier. I mean, that guy's awesome.
Yep.
His release is so fast. It's like you can hardly even see him get the shot off. But, I mean, he rocks. He rocked at North Florida last year. I'm not sure how many people are watching the A-Sun like I am. But, I mean, he's awesome. He's an All-American right now. He's in that conversation for National Player of the Year, SEC Player of the Year. That's probably Jahni Broome's to lose. But, I mean, they really struggled to, you know, limit him, kind of struggled to, you know, keep him from getting his shots off. And obviously some of that does come back to the offensive rebounding, but I do want to highlight, you know, just how good and how awesome Chaz Lanier is.
That's 2 years in a row where Barnes has gone out and find, you know, they found a player from kind of obscurity to be their leader as Dalton Connect last year, and then now it's Lanier.
Yeah, no, and I mean he's good at finding them, right? And I mean, it's not just him that he's finding from the portal. I mean, Igor Milicic was at Charlotte last season, 18 rebounds in that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty good night on the boards. He didn't have a great shooting night, but you know, 18 boards, and then obviously some of those are offensive rebounds that turned into those 16 extra points. So, yeah, I mean, he's found some really good portal additions. Obviously, Dalton Connect is always going to be the one people talked about. But I mean, Chaz Lanier is awesome. Igor Milicic was great in that game. But yeah, I mean, the defense, I mean, they did get some stops, but then, you know, Tennessee just gets the boards, which obviously is going to be, I guess that's not technically a stop, but you know what I mean?
They made them miss their shot.
Yeah. They miss their shot, but then they get
the first
or two more.
I think maybe the way to say it's the first shot defense was good.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And then things started to break down after the rebounds.
Yes, yeah. So maybe that's something you can look at and say, okay, well, at least this was all right. You have to clean up the boards. You know, John Calipari, you know, I asked him about it post-game, and he was
let's play the soundbite.
I didn't know we had the soundbite. Yeah, Sydney, let's go.
Yeah, Sydney, play this. This is what Calipari had to say about the offensive rebounding.
Set. How did we – all I kept saying in the second half, let's get it to single digits. We do something good, they get an offensive rebound. We do something good, they get an offensive rebound. We make it 13, they get two offensive rebounds, two threes, and you look around like, guys, it has nothing to do with anything but rebounding. If I play a smaller team, guard's got to rebound defensively. I don't need you to offensive rebound. But defensively, you got to come up with balls. So – you know, we could play a bit bigger team with a do at three, but like I said, he didn't play well today. That was, he's probably had one of those this year. So in 14 games, he's had one other dud. He had it here. Couldn't make a free throw, and then he shoots an air ball three. That's not who he is. But give them credit. They made him play that way.
John Calipari on Arkansas's rebounding issues, 51-29. Was the total rebounding discrepancy in this game, and then in offensive rebounds, it was 24-9. So just a really – Arkansas, it goes back to Adu. If he's not playing well, I don't know that they've got what it takes inside. Like they are really, really dependent on him to be their force inside, because I don't see it from Avisic. And with Brazil, I don't know that I see it against more physical teams.
And that's – you mentioned it there, the physicality. John Calipari had mentioned after the Oakland game that he wasn't happy with, you know, where they stand from a physicality standpoint. And I asked Kenny Payne about that midweek when he had his Zoom press conference. And, you know, they said that they'd been working on it. And, you know, obviously you want to see that continue to improve, because they got completely out physicaled. I don't know if that's the right way to term it, like say that. But Tennessee was a lot more physical than Arkansas was. And that's something that they've, you know, talked about. They need to get better with. And frankly, like you mentioned it earlier on the show, Ole Miss is not going to be any less physical than Tennessee. Maybe probably more physical. It's a Chris Beard team, right? The Chris Beard teams are always physical. And I mean, that's not gonna change all throughout conference play. I mean, every SEC team is going to have, you know, a physical guy inside. So I mean, that's something that they absolutely need to improve upon. It's something that they need to, you know, get fixed, and frankly, fast.
Before we get out of here, get you out of here, your thoughts on Knoxville, Thompson Bowling Arena, your first time there?
Oh, that was awesome. That's a great place to catch a game as a neutral. Or if we got any Tennessee fans who are watching this who aren't going there, neutral.
I don't know that a lot of people understand that that's the biggest arena in the SEC.
Yeah, no, it's a big arena.
It was
yeah.
built during that era whenever bigger was better. Like, you know, late 70s into the 80s, it was, let's see how big we can build this thing. They've actually scaled it back, because I think originally it was about 24,000 seats, and now it's down to somewhere around 20,000, 21,000. They put in a lot of, you know, premium-type seatings on one side of it, but I think it's an underrated venue.
Yeah, it was a great, you know, game day atmosphere. you know, it was a lot of fun. I do want to say, you know, thank you to Tennessee Athletics for their little tribute to Bob Holt. That was that was really nice of them. But yeah, I mean, Thompson Bowling Arena, awesome place to catch a game. If you're ever in Knoxville, you know, if you want to catch a game as a neutral, because obviously, like, I'm a reporter, I'm not going there rooting for a team. I was like, this place rocks.
Arkansas fell to 4-16 all time in Knoxville. They have not had good success over there on Rocky Top. I want to tell you, you can find our podcast on Apple or Spotify. Just search Whole Hog Sports. We've got a video version on YouTube. You can also find by searching Whole Hog Sports on YouTube. And we post the podcast each day to our Facebook and our Twitter pages. Anthony, thanks for being here. When we come back, Ethan Westerman is going to join me. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
When it gets to those 50-50 rebounds, it's effort and, you know, making it, you know, Coach Polinski showed after the game the other day, he showed a football clip of a running back that got hit and talked about yardage after contact. And that's what offensive rebounding is. You're going to get hit. Can you go get some yardage afterwards and get yourself in position to either get it, open up a gap for somebody else to get it, tip it back?
That was Tennessee coach Rick Barnes after Arkansas loses to the Volunteers the other day in Knoxville. Barnes, 820 career victories now, just four shy of John Calipari for the lead among active NCAA coaches. Two just, you know, great. Barnes, it's kind of surprising me he's not in the Hall of Fame yet. I guess he didn't have the national championship that gets some coaches in there. But I would think for longevity, he'll be in the Hall of Fame one day. He may have a championship team on his hands this year.
I'd think so, too. I mean, people have said a lot about Tennessee and their postseason success in recent years, but if this team can't do it for them, I mean, I don't know which one can, because that team that played Arkansas Saturday was really, really good.
You can Sydney, let's fix this real quick. Cut. Start again. Ready? All right. 3, 2, 1. Hey, everyone, tell you that you can... 3, 2, 1. Hey, we want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. This is Ethan Westerman in studio with me now, rocking his boll weevil shirt. You got a brother on the team, right?
Was on the team. He just graduated.
Was on the team. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Just had his senior year.
All right. So. Just wanted to give people some clarification there.
Yeah. And I just like to support, you know, our random D2 colleges in the state.
There you go. The Boll Weevils. One of the great mascots, by the way, in college sports. What were your thoughts on this game Saturday? Because you hear Barnes there talking about, you know, he kind of equated offensive rebounding to yards after contact for running back. It's kind of like watching Cam Scannaboo. It's sometimes it just comes down to who wants it more. And I felt like Tennessee had a lot more want to on Saturday than Arkansas did.
Yeah. Tennessee was number one, just the better team. Like, I don't know how else to say it other than they were just better in pretty much every facet. I do think the score was a lot uglier than it would be if these teams played a few more times, just because Arkansas was not making open. They had open shots a lot of times and just could not make shots, and that happens in basketball. But what was really just kind of inexcusable was, yeah, the offensive rebounds and the lack of of at least limiting those. I think whenever you play a team like Tennessee, there's some teams that you'll face, and it's not necessarily saying we're going to take away their offensive rebounding, because there's some teams that are just going to get some. But you have to look at the team and reduce the number. I mean, they can't be getting 24 of them. And that's what happened on Saturday, was they got just a crazy amount of them. I think if Arkansas takes down the number of offensive rebounds given up, make a few more open shots, you have yourself a little bit more interesting of a game. But Tennessee, just the better team.
And I thought Tennessee had been challenged a lot more in non-conference. I mentioned this the other day. They played six Power 5 teams in non-conference. Now, three of those were shared opponents with Arkansas. But then they also played, Indiana in an exhibition game. Arkansas played Kansas. Arkansas played TCU. But I just felt like, you know, from the start of the regular season up until the start of the SEC play, Tennessee had challenged itself more. I thought that showed a little bit during the game. It helps being at home. It helps having some of the horses that Tennessee has. Just a tough showing for Arkansas out of the gate. And I think it really puts an emphasis on the two games this week. They play Ole Miss on Wednesday night at Bud Walton, and they play Florida on Saturday at Bud Walton.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pressure now, and it was going to be this way anyway, but there's a lot of pressure to win your home games and kind of hold serve and hope that you can steal one or two on the road somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. I look at this week and I say they got to win one. It'd be great to sweep them both. Because you start conference play 0-3, and that just feels a lot different than 1-2 or 2-1. 0-3 just feels like this hole that you're constantly having to try and crawl out of. And I after this week, they do have nothing's easy in the SEC, but whenever you look at your next three games are LSU, Missouri, and Georgia, it feels a little bit better. But two of those are on the road, and life on the road is going to be really tough in the SEC this year. I do think that it served them well. I know people, you know, don't like the score, don't like how the game went, but to open up SEC play on the road at the best team in the country, I think it did get to serve as a little bit of a, like, hey, this is life in the SEC this year. You gotta bring your A game. I mean, they went to their first real. I know Miami was a road game, but let's be real, like,
it's a 7,000 seat arena, and it wasn't full.
Yeah, they went to a packed arena with the best team in the country.
Or maybe it was 7,000 was the attendance, but the point being, it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't a very hostile environment from, I mean, maybe it was a little bit more in there, but from TV, you can tell watching a TV broadcast whenever there's an arena that's just bringing it, and that was Tennessee on Saturday. And Arkansas, I mean, 6 of 13 from the free throw line, that's not going to get it done on the road in conference play, so that was another thing. I think it served them well to start off conference play with a hard road game, because, you know, I think the next time they hit the road, when they go play at LSU, maybe they'll be a little bit more ready.
Well, and LSU was the only home team that lost in the SEC on Saturday, lost to Vanderbilt 80-72. Pretty much every other game was a spanking by the mm-hmm. home team. I mean, Florida and Kentucky, that was a close game at Rupp, but otherwise, you look at these final scores, and Ole Miss beat Georgia by 12 at home, Tennessee beat Arkansas by 24, Mississippi State by 35 over South Carolina, Auburn by 16 over Mizzou, Alabama beat OU by 28, handed the Sooners their first loss of the year, and Texas lost by 20 in College Station. I mean, I don't know what I was expecting Saturday, but I think I was expecting a lot more competitive play based on the results of the non-conference than what actually materialized.
Yeah, I think that this was kind of, you look at a lot of teams in their early, just the way that college basketball schedules are put together in their non-conference slate, they played a lot of maybe like neutral site games and stuff. I think Saturday was for a lot of teams, a real first road, just tough environment, because this is going to be life in the SEC now, to where it's not just like, you know, you go to Kentucky and you expect a packed crowd, you go to Arkansas, Tennessee and expect it. I think that right now, just because of the level of play in the SEC, there's going to be a lot of arenas that are bringing it now. I mean, Alabama's not an easy place to play. A&M's not an easy place to play. What is an easy place to play now? Maybe Vanderbilt, but like still, even then, they've got a good team this year. You're going to have to bring it on the road. And I think that if you're Arkansas, you do look at, I mean, you got to stay locked in the moment of, you got Ole Miss and Florida this week. What a three-game start to SEC, by the way, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Florida. But you look ahead a little bit and you're saying, okay, if we're going to start stealing some road games, they're on the horizon. You got to, I think, whenever they go to LSU and Missouri, you got to at least get one of those because it doesn't get, it's not easy in the SEC, but out of those teams that you're playing on the road, it doesn't get much easier, I'd say. But yeah, this week is important for them. They got to get back on track.
I can't remember if it was Ken Palm or what the metric was, but I saw something before SEC play started that the 16 hardest schedules left in college basketball were the 16 SEC teams.
Yeah, ESPN's BPI, I think it had it like 1 to 16 SEC. I'm like, it makes sense. I mean, you're playing – this is insane to me that I think all but one team in the SEC is top 60 in the net. That's ridiculous. That is so unheard of. There's always – like these major conferences, a team or two that's lingering below 100.
The lack of competitiveness, though, on Saturday makes me wonder how many of those teams that we think are tournament teams right now, how many of them are actually going to be there at the end. You know, I mean, people are talking about maybe 12, maybe 13 teams in the tournament. You know, does the conference, like, what sets SEC apart in a lot of sports is the fact that, and we talked about this the other day, your bottom tier teams, they can jump up and beat your top tier teams. Mm-hmm. You know, is that going to happen in conference play, or are you going to have like this kind of big gap between the four at the top and the four or five at the bottom? And that's going to be, you know, that's going to determine how many teams are going to get into the tournament.
Right now I look at it and I think South Carolina is kind of your bottom team, and then maybe LSU is next. But like, it's really like those beating any of these other teams wouldn't be like a shocker. I think you can weigh the difficulty of a conference by, and people look at it top to bottom a lot of the times. I think you can look at it bottom to top, and that's how you tell how tough a conference is. Whenever your bottom of the league still has, like, you know, like the bottom fourth of the SEC has, you know, like four teams or three or four teams that are in the top 60 of the net, that's insane. But I do think that the SEC it laid its groundwork in the non-conference to where if you win seven, I think if you go 7-11 in the SEC, you're going to be in the discussion. I'm not saying you're going to get in, but I think you'll definitely be in the discussion.
It's kind of like how the bottom of the NFC South can come up and beat the top, right?
Yeah, totally.
I say that to tease. I've got some thoughts on NFL playoffs and college football playoffs coming up in our next segment. Ethan's a Falcons fan, a little bit dejected after what happened yesterday. Jonas Adu, 4 points, 5 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 steals, a turnover. In 29 minutes, Arkansas was outscored by 9 when he was on the floor on Saturday in Knoxville. This is what Rick Barnes had to say about Adu coming back to town, and he got hounded at this game. I mean, every time that he touched the ball, every time that there was a play involving Adu, he really heard it from the home crowd.
Well, I love Jonas, and when I shook his hand, I hugged him. I said, Jonas, I love you, and I do love him because he found a situation that was really hard for him to turn down, and he did it, which I have no problems with it. But I think it was hard. I mean, because he did a lot for us while he was here. But I wish him nothing but the best. I'd say the same thing about Cam Carr. You know, it's like Jemai Meshack said it best. He said, all we can do is pray for him and wish him the best. But we've got to take care of our business here and keep moving. And that's what we've done.
Rick Barnes on Jonas Adu, and I just – you can't put the loss on one player, because, you know, you can say Thero had a bad game. You can say Nellie Davis had a bad game. Adu didn't have a good game. You know, there were others. Visic, he's kind of disappeared, I feel like, offensively for this team. But I felt like if Arkansas was going to have any type of success at Tennessee, they were going to have a good game from Adu down low, and they just didn't get it.
Yeah, they didn't have any – they were going to have to get rebounding from somewhere. And 5 rebounds for him, I mean, I guess that's fine number, but I think it's got to be a bit higher.
Well, like, I mean, what we don't know is how many missed shots were there whenever he was on the floor. I would suspect there were quite a few, because Arkansas, I mean, they hold Tennessee to something like 39% shooting. So Tennessee gets 20. I would be interested to know how many of the offensive rebounds came when Adu was on the floor. Mm-hmm. I think it was a pretty good number.
Yeah. All I know is I'm looking up and down the rebounding for Arkansas, and they got to get more somewhere. I mean, it's just not going to cut it. I get it. Tennessee's a really good offensive rebounding team, but I think that what Saturday did was it showed. I get it. There's a lot of stuff weighted with being on the road. Life is tough on the road, but it gave Arkansas a real barometer of, hey, this is how far away you are right now from the top of the. There's another level to the SEC right now. Like, everybody's good, but there's another level that has Tennessee, Auburn. Maybe you can throw a couple others in there.
Alabama, I think, is in that conversation.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, they got a great roster. It's just, it shows a real separation of how far ahead those teams are. And maybe whenever Arkansas gets a game at home against one of these teams, they'll be able to show, like, hey, they do belong here. But Saturday gave no reason to think that. I do want to point out something real quick. It actually, Rick Barnes, that quote he had, it, I didn't realize Cameron Carr had left their program, but just fun fact, that's the younger brother of Chrissy Carr, who played here on the women's team.
Hmm.
And I think he had, like, he has real, like, NBA potential, but it's just a random side note after I heard him say his name.
Well, that's a good transition to talk about the women's team. I want to ask you real quick. It was kind of like watching the same game against Texas, right, on Sunday as Tennessee. They got killed on the offensive boards, and they end up getting blown out. Two straight 34-point losses to start conference play.
Yeah, a couple orange teams wearing the letter T just bashed on the boards. I mean, the men gave up 24 offensive rebounds. The women gave up 25. I will say, just with the – it's a little more, you know, the men, I think, more of a bad look for them because the women are just outsized. A lot of these SEC teams are playing and they're going to get beat on the boards like that. The men to get beat by 24 offensive rebounds is pretty – I mean, that just can't happen. But the women, again, I mean, it's been the story.
It's just going to be how their season goes.
That's just how it's going to go, I think, at this point. I mean, they got to limit that number down a little bit because that's really bad. But they also turned the ball over 25 times, which Texas is like – I knew that was probably going to be the case because Texas women are, like, one of the best in the country at turning teams over. I mean, it's just they do it to everybody. But, man, some of the turnovers Arkansas women had, it was like they couldn't inbound the ball. It was like nobody's getting open. They got 2 5-second calls I saw. And then multiple just, like, can't throw it in, and so turnover.
What was Texas' largest lead in the game?
I think it was the final score. It was okay. It was actually, like...
Because Neighbor said afterward, he said, if you look at the final score, you think it's the same thing that happened against LSU, but it was a different game.
It wasn't, and that was... I think it was good that he said that. People are going to look at the score, and, I mean, it's... You get beat by 34, you got beat by 34. That's just what it is. But they got outscored in the fourth quarter tremendously. They had it at an 11-point game midway through the third quarter, which I know... people who watch women's basketball realize that if you're within 11 of a top five team, you're actually playing pretty well because it's the talent gap top to bottom in women's basketball is insane. I mean, like they had 6 McDonald's All-Americans on their team. Arkansas's got a roster that had one player that really scored in D1 college basketball entering the year. And they had it within 11 in the third quarter, and then it just got away from them. I mean, they started turning it over more. Texas started hitting more shots. But it was – they played them well, like, for a while, and then it just got away. But that's – they're the same boat as the men as far as the – they knocked out two really tough opponents right off the bat. Arkansas's men are knocking off, you know, some of the just best in the country right off the bat. And they have a chance to maybe win some games coming up here soon.
Neighbors has been a lot more vocal, I think, this year. Maybe a lot more, it's not to say that he's been disingenuous in the past, but it feels like he's a lot more honest in his press conferences after games this year. I was a little taken aback to hear him, you know, just acknowledge the fact he said, you know, we're going to be an underdog in every game that we play this year after they lost to LSU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he knows they got picked. He likes to bring it up that they got unanimously picked by coaches, is what he says, as last in the league. I don't think he cares about the media poll. I think he cares that all the rest of the coaches in the league all said you're going to finish last. So I don't think a lot of people are saying they're going to go winless in SEC play. I mean, maybe, but I just think that they'll find a win or two in there. They're not playing. You look at some of their scores, and it's head scratching, like losing that bad. But if you actually watch the game, there's enough in there that you think that maybe against one of these lesser teams in the league but the funny thing is other teams look at them and say that's our win. But you just feel like they can probably pick off a team in there somewhere.
Either way, it's a bad year.
Either way,
it's a terrible year that they're having, and it's not going to end well.
If they get to 10 wins this year, build Izzy Higginbottom her statue because she's a heck of a player.
She's very good.
She's a really good player, and it's
unfortunate for them that they've got this type of talent and they don't have more around her to have a more complete team.
You stick her on some of the teams that they had in the past, and she would have been a total difference maker to the whole season. But it's right now, I mean, she's having to go out there. What she's doing is actually really impressive, that she's getting her buckets against these teams. I mean, to score 27 against LSU, not really anybody does that, so...
Got some more coming up, some thoughts on football and also on the playoffs, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life.
Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Some football news from over the weekend. Arkansas gains another player out of the transfer portal. This time it's Marcus Dumervil, an offensive lineman from Maryland. Began his college career at LSU. Dumervil, 6'6", 301 pounds. Played in 10 of 12 games this year. Started 3 times at left tackle for Maryland. Also visited UCF. Had plans to visit UNLV. Arkansas has really stocked up on the offensive lineman this year in the transfer portal.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of, you know, it gives me shades, he does, of last year they went and got Blackstock, another Big Ten tackle who, you know, has the, I guess, the size and the potential. You just wonder how it's going to pan out. Blackstock, I know, didn't have a great year this year, but, you know, it's a guy that maybe you can keep building on with and try and get them to where they're going to be really hard to keep off the field. And you wonder if that's how this guy is too, where they just see a lot of potential there. They really have stocked up. They've gotten off the top of my head, they got Kittler from UCF, who was center there. They got the tackle from Georgia Tech, Robinson. They got McCrory, the guy from Oregon, who's huge. They got Maryland Dumervil, and then they got Broussard from Ole Miss. So that's 5 linemen. I might be missing one in there too.
A lot of tackles. It makes me wonder, is there a plan with Harris and with Carmona maybe to move them inside next year?
Yeah.
That might be something worth watching in the spring. We touched on this on Friday's podcast. Didn't really get a chance to talk about it, but Anton Junkaz has declared for the NFL draft. He had a season of eligibility remaining as part of this Diego Pavia injunction in the NCAA, giving a blanket waiver to anyone who had been a former JUCO player whose eligibility was to end in 24. But, you know, I think maybe he's an example that there's so many players, you know, like Miami's got a 9th-year player on its team this year, and there's so many players who want to stick around and play college sports for as long as they can. Here's an example of a guy who, going into the season, thought, hey, this is my last year, and now he's going to move on. I mean, it would have been easy for him to stick around and hang around for another year, but, you know, sometimes it's for the best for the player to say, look, I got to put this chapter behind me.
Yeah, and you wonder with a guy like Junkaj, because I do think that another year at Arkansas, if he is really wanting to increase his draft stock, would have probably been beneficial, because I don't think there's a lot to go off from this year, maybe just still from his Albany stuff. So you wonder, you know, there's some guys you're like, is that really, you know, he declared for the draft, but is he really just ready to move on in life in general? You just never know. He is kind of the one. There's 2 guys on the team I think that this rule could have applied for with the waiver. I think Marquise Robinson, the cornerback, who he also has declared for the draft, because he played a year at a Mississippi JUCO. So I think he could have, in theory, come back as well. But both guys have opted to move on, and they declared for the draft. So I guess that's just kind of what they wanted to do all along. And Junkaj, I think, if somebody had said this before the bowl game, like that this was what he was going to do, nobody would have. I mean, it's like whatever, but I think what he did in the bowl game made people really want to see him again for another year. But, you know, athletes make their own decisions.
And then Rashad DeBinion transferring to Appalachian State. That's where Dow Loggins is now the head coach. Doesn't it strike you how many players have ended up at Appalachian State and how many players ended up at South Carolina? Well, I'm just talking about log. I mean, you could make the same case with the people who went to UNLV and then at Purdue with Barry Odom and some of the others. Recruiting is so much about relationships, and I think it says a lot about, I would say, Loggins and Odom, the fact that so many of these players, that whenever it's come time for them to leave Arkansas, they've ended up back with the coaches who recruited them there in the first place.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm looking at Arkansas's had 25 guys transfer out, and between App State and Purdue, I'm counting off the top of my head right now, five. There might be six. I might be not counting right, but five or six that are going to a program with one of those two coaches there, which just goes to show, like, you know, players do remember how you treated them, and they're, those two guys have really, they've left their mark of Arkansas guys wanting to go play for them.
Well, in the last 2 years, UNLV and South Carolina were the popular landing spots, so just something to keep in mind. Okay, so I was watching, I'm a big NFL fan, by the way. I love the NFL. The Cowboys are my team, but if I watched only the Cowboys, I'd go insane. But I love watching the entire league, and it was so refreshing to watch this weekend as playoff bids were being finalized, not to have the Bengals out there and saying, well, look at our body of work, and the NFC North is so much more, or the AFC North is, you know, I mean, look at what we're having to play versus what Denver's playing in the AFC West. And it goes back to what I've said about college football. They have got to figure out a way to get their playoff to where you've got some sort of standardized way to get into the playoff and take this human opinion out of it. Because, again, it was refreshing to see the Bengals. Yeah, they won five in a row at the end of the year to get to a winning record, and they could have potentially gotten into the playoff depending on how things fell on Sunday. But you don't hear anybody in Cincinnati out here crying over the fact that they didn't get in. They understand that, you know, these are the rules. This is how it's set. You know, this is how it's set up. And there's no group of people who are the reason that the Broncos got in over the Bengals, or, you know, that you know, this team got in over that team. It's just the NFL. They've got the best sports model going in the world right now. And that's why, you know, you look at the TV ratings at the end of the year and the top 100 TV, you know, the most watched TV programs, like 92 are NFL games, and there's like six college football games, and there's the Grammys and there's the Oscars. And but the NFL, it's people tune in and watch this because it's such a quality product. And you can say what you want to about them expanding their playoff and how they, you know, format their playoff. There's some things that they do in terms of who they give home games to that I don't agree with. But the thing I love is the fact that in pro sports, and it's so different than college sports, is the fact that there's no bickering at the end of the year about who got in. You understand what the rules were, and you didn't do enough to get in, or you did enough to get in, and it's as simple as that.
Well, yeah, and like, I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, unfortunately, and like, I knew going into Sunday, if the Buccaneers lose and the Falcons win, Falcons are in the playoff. If that doesn't happen, then it's over. That's just how it is. And had the Falcons won, they would have gotten home field advantage, which is kind of crazy. But, like, that's just how it is. That's the rule. Everybody knows that's the rule going into it. And the way that the playoff works in the NFL is, you know, you might get home field advantage, but you're going to be pitted up because you're the four seed. The Falcons would have been playing the Vikings first game, and they're probably going to lose that, and season's over. I mean, it's just how it's weighted right now in the NFL. I mean, it's like, you get rewarded for winning your division. You get rewarded for getting your home field advantage and for getting in the playoff, but that's how it's weighted even is, if you were the worst one to do that, congrats. Your reward is getting a really good wild card team. So I just think that, yeah, the way that it's weighted right now and the way that you just know what you have to do to get in is nice. It is hard to replicate that in college football whenever you have conferences that, you know, prove in the postseason to not be, one's not like the other, but it's at the same time, you should get the opportunity to prove that you're not, that your conference isn't the worst.
But you get that in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You should get the opportunity to prove it.
There are three teams in the NFC North that if they're playing in the NFC South, they win that division by several games.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to it's the Buccaneers and the Falcons, and it's coming down to who sucks less at the end of the year, right? I mean, and so, but so you do have that type of imbalance in the NFL, but you also just kind of acknowledge the fact that, yes, there are going to be teams who do not play as good of a schedule as other teams. You know, think about how the NFL schedule is constructed in the first place. If you were a first place team the year before, you're going to play all of your conference's other first place teams from the year before. So theoretically, your schedule is going to be harder than like say the Cowboys this year. They finished first in their division last year, so they played all the other first place teams. And then you've got the Commanders who finished fourth, and so they're going to play the other fourth place teams. And it all goes into this cycle in the NFL where they're trying to promote parity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, think about the Commanders. They were terrible last year, but they get a new coach. They go into the draft, and they get to get one of the top draft picks. They take Jaden Daniels, second overall. They get to play this group of other teams who were not as good last year. And then so here they are, and they're a game or two away from winning their division, and they're an 11-win team in the playoff. You don't see a lot of that in college football. You see some turnarounds like that. Like Indiana is a similar turnaround where they get a coach, they get a roster overhaul, they catch the right schedule, and they win a lot of games. But Indiana is a little bit of an anomaly, and there's nothing in college football that's set in place to promote parity the way it is in the NFL.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, like, the way that it works in the NFL, you can have a 9-8 NFC South team make the playoff, and sometimes they needed to be because sometimes your division is that hard. Or, like, I mean, the Falcons, if they had made it, they were an overtime loss away to the Commanders from sweeping the NFC East this year. They played all the teams and would have had a clean sweep of them. So sometimes, I'm not saying the NFC South was better than the East at all, but sometimes there is the case of a team that their division was hard. I think that I just like the fact that you know what you have to do to get in the playoff, and that it all ends up working itself out. I do think that college football this year did a good job with the playoff of getting opportunities. Like, I feel like the teams that made the playoff, like, end of the day, we didn't have, I know Alabama fans were complaining about it, some Ole Miss fans were complaining, some South Carolina, but end of the day, nobody was sitting there like really sympathizing, because if you're on the cusp, it's like whatever, you know you should have beaten Vanderbilt, Alabama, Ole Miss, you know you should have beaten Kentucky. So I did like that aspect. I think right now the biggest problem is the whole seeding and fixing that. But I did think that the college football playoff gave opportunity this year to teams. It just hasn't delivered the great games at all.
This doesn't necessarily fix the seeding, but here's I think college football can take some steps from the NFL to improve its playoff. And here's what I would do. Number one, take away the requirement that the top-ranked group of five team get in. If you want to be part of the playoff conversation, go get yourself in a conference that can get you there, which right now is the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12. Boise State, they had chances to get into bigger conferences, and they have taken the road of less resistance.
Mm-hmm.
I think in order to, you know, kind of keep that status of, you know, we're really good, but we don't have to show we're really good all the time. We can maybe play an Oregon at the start of the season, and we can play a Penn State at the end of the year, and then we can, and then you compare that to what TCU did, who used to be in Boise State's conference. They go to the Big 12, and they've really had to prove themselves. They got into the playoff a couple of years ago by winning a legitimate conference. So that's number one. Get rid of all the group of five teams. They can have their own national championship if they want to. Let's add another subdivision to college football, because quite frankly, nobody believes that Toledo is on the same level as Alabama.
Yeah, they did beat the crap out of Mississippi State, though.
Well, you're Kent State is not on the same level. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that's number one. Number two, I think that everybody needs to be a part of a conference. Notre Dame, no more of this independent stuff. You got to go join the ACC. You got to join the Big Ten, whichever one you want to do. Be a part of a conference. That's going to help level the playing field from a scheduling standpoint. Number three, you've got to have a standardized type schedule where the Big Ten says we're going to play this many games, and the SEC says we're going to play that many games, and the ACC, and so on. You know, eliminate some of these games against teams that are not in your subdivision. So if you know the Power Four kind of breaks away from the group of five, so be it. And then number four, go to divisions or pods within these conferences, and then select your teams for the playoffs based on who wins those divisions or who wins those pods. And then, you know, I think you've got a lot less gripe about the playoff at that point, because it's a lot more uniform, standard schedule that everybody plays, and everybody's kind of playing by the same rules. You might have a division or a pod that's got five teams, and some might have four, but for the most part, it's a lot more uniform than what it is right now.
Yeah. I still am a fan of the group, the highest-ranked group of five. I don't think I'll ever not be a fan of that, because I do think this year.
But when have they ever competed when they've got the chance?
How many chances have they gotten, though?
Well, Cincinnati got a chance, and they got whipped by Alabama. Boise got a chance.
There's two. I mean, Cincinnati also, I think, a year before almost beat Georgia or something.
Yeah, but that was in a Peach Bowl where you've got, number one, it's during the COVID year, and there was all kinds of issues.
Well, I don't think we have a great enough sample size yet. The Boise, you watch them against.
I don't think they deserve to get in based on, and I'm fine with them getting their chance, whatever. But if you look at it from a whole, I don't think that those types of teams deserve to get in because they're not playing the same type of schedule. Boise State's 11-1 is not the same as, you know, an SEC 11-1.
I just think it's a lot easier said than done of just, hey, you got to join a big conference to a lot of these teams, because that's not always it's not always feasible for some of these smaller teams. And yeah, I get it. Like, there's some of them that do it every year. Like a Boise's always in the mix, or Cincinnati. They're now in the Big 12.
And that's
a little
thing.
Easier to say. But what if there's a UCF was in the same boat. Now
and
they're
they joined
the Big
12. The teams that typically get, you know, that they get stiff armed out of the process, they go find a way to get themselves into the process.
Mm-hmm.
And Boise's really about the only team that we're talking about. There are some others. Memphis is, you know, sometimes in the conversation. UNLV.
Up until this past year, SMU.
Yeah, SMU, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, okay, so you want to be a part of the conversation, go get yourself in a conference. I think it is easy.
Yeah. Well, I just think that the whole giving a group of five a chance, it's one spot, and at the end of the day, if that one spot gives a team a chance to at least prove that it can compete against somebody, we've only had two real, like I said, Cincinnati that one year in Boise, chances yet over the Alabama team that lost to Vanderbilt and lost to who all they lose to? Vanderbilt, Tennessee, and somebody else in there. Oklahoma. I'm all for giving the other guy a shot because Alabama played its way out by losing. And I mean, it's just, I don't think that giving one spot is going to mess up the playoff.
You got a 12-team playoff. I think three should go to the SEC, three to the ACC, three to the Big Ten, three to the Big 12.
See, I don't agree, because I don't think the Big 12 or the ACC this year had three.
But again, by what you're saying, the NFC South shouldn't get a playoff team.
Should get one.
Okay.
Not three. That's the Big 12 and the ACC did not have three teams top to bottom that would have beaten Boise State at all.
You're right about that. You're probably right about that.
It's just, I think that the Boise State would have beaten a lot of teams in the playoff.
The only other way,
Big Ten is showing it's really good.
The only other way I could see maybe doing something is like if you had the SEC and the Big 12 as a conference or a division, and the Big Ten and the ACC, and then you do this deal where, you know, hey, you're 10-3, you're going to get in, and the college football. I guess the whole story here is that the college football playoff could take a lot of, and college football in general could take a lot of lessons from the NFL to improve their product.
Yeah, and I think that it starts this year. The number one thing from this year's college football playoff is just seeding. I think everybody can agree that the seeding didn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, it didn't.
So I think that's a good place to start. But, you know, I think really if these playoff games had delivered a few more just really good games, like right now, what do we have to lean on? There was a really good Texas and Arizona State game, and there was a pretty good Clemson-Texas game. I think if you have more results right now, there's less complaints about the playoff. But right now, you're just seeing so many non-competitive
games.
But
you see that in the NFL, too.
Yeah,
I mean, last year, I think I said this the other day, that the first round of the NFL playoffs, the margin of victory was 17 points. And the first round of the college football playoff this year, the margin of victory was 19.
Yeah.
So that's anything.
Yeah.
Playoffs continue this week. Thursday, Notre Dame and Penn State. On Friday, Ohio State in Texas in the Cotton Bowl. Notre Dame a 2.5-point favorite. Ohio State a 6-point favorite going into this week. They're playing on Thursday and Friday this week, by the way, because nobody wants to they don't want to go head-to-head against the NFL on Saturday when the NFL playoffs start. So Thursday and Friday is when the college football playoffs continue. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll kind of start looking ahead a little bit to Arkansas and Ole Miss basketball. It's a Wednesday game at Bud Walton Arena, and who knows what else will happen between now and then. Hope we'll see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. And until tomorrow, have a great day, everyone.